Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari commissions Africa's largest refinery.
I can tell you for sure that Nigerians are very, very happy that an individual can literally come to the rescue of a nation.
Sudan refugee children seek schooling in Chad. The acquittal of suspects in a $100 million drug bust sparks a public outcry in Liberia. The opposition in the DRC protests election preparation irregularities. Guinea's media says it will ban coverage of the military junta beginning today, Tuesday.
From what I know, the spokesperson of the government has made a statement saying that any journalist that will make a statement that will threaten the peace of the country will be shut down.
And Uganda's parliamentary speaker appeals to the East African community to support her country's anti-LGBTQ bill. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari on Monday commissioned a new refinery built by Africa's richest businessman, Aliko Dangote. The commissioning attracted West African leaders, including the presidents of Ghana, Togo, Niger, and a host of diplomats. The refinery, which is expected to process 650,000 barrels of oil a day, is the largest in Africa. Nigerians appraised Dangote for single-handedly coming to the rescue of their country with the refinery, which they say will have a significant impact on the availability of petroleum products in Nigeria and the rest of Africa. For more reaction, viewers Peter Clotty reached Abuja-based analyst attorney Leno Anyogo.
Well, I can tell you for sure that Nigerians are very, very happy that an individual can literally come to the rescue of a nation. I say that because we have government refineries in Kaduna, in Warri, in Port Harcourt, that have been moribund for the past more than 20 years or so. These are government-established refineries that have not been working, and the salaries of staff have been paid all this while. And so that accounts for the heavy reliance of importation of consumable or refined products from outside the country. And of course, the effect is high. I mean, the cost of petroleum is high. Assuming we're able to be refining our petroleum, because we're the ninth producers of crude oil in the world.
Leonard, how significant is this oil refinery to Nigeria and to West Africa? Because I understand that there will be enough for export as well.
Yes, you know, before, of course, you know that the other West African sub-region depends on fuel from Nigeria, because I think using the West African standard, Nigerian fuel is still cheaper. I mean, the end product, actually. So the refining capacity of that Dangote refinery that has just been commissioned will serve not just the West African. I think it should go beyond even cover the African continent and perhaps be able to export to some other continent that may need it. So it's such a huge investment. The joy of the commissioning is overwhelming. But then, you know, the misfeeling is that Nigerians are very angry that the government cannot maintain its own refineries.
President Muhammadu Buhari has come under withering criticism since he still holds the position of the Minister for Petroleum. And before then, he, under military rule, he still held that portfolio. People have said that he commissioned this refinery by Aliko Dangote, yet the government refineries are not functioning.
On the social media platform, Nigerians are saying that as a substantive Minister of Petroleum, I'm talking about President Buhari, because he's directly in charge of the Minister of Petroleum. There's no Minister of Petroleum in Nigeria. He is the Minister of Petroleum, because what we have is a junior minister who is directly responsible to him or reports to him. Now, you as a Minister of Petroleum of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, all your refineries are not working, have not been working. And in fact, when President Buhari was elected in 2015, he promised that the refineries were going to work. These are some of his campaign promises. And unfortunately, he's leaving office in a few days and none is working. So for you to go commission an individual refinery, you know, that would be an indictment of the Nigerian state. But hey, kudos to Aliko Dangote that has come to the rescue of Nigerians.
What impact will this refinery have on the production or supply of the end product of Nigeria's crude oil in Nigeria, sample petroleum and gas.
It's going to be massive. It's going to be massive. I think the populace will have a sign of relief.
That was analyst and attorney Leonard Anyogo speaking with VOA's Peter Clotte from Nigeria's capital, Abuja. The media in Guinea has imposed a blackout on the activities of the military junta led by Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya beginning today, Tuesday. In a statement issued Monday, media associates declared Minister of Telecommunications and Government spokesperson Ousmane Gawuwa Diallo an enemy of the press. He is quoted as saying last week that he would not hesitate to shut down radio stations that, according to him, are preaching social division in the country. This was followed by a sporadic internet signal throughout the country and the sabotage of some radio stations. Faya Milimuno is the leader of the Liberal Bloc Party in Guinea. He tells me that tensions between the military government and the media have been rising recently to a new level due to frustration with the lack of progress in the transition to civilian rule, compounded recently by a soothsayer prediction that the junta could soon be overthrown.
From what I know, the spokesperson of the government, Mr. Ousmane Gawuwa Diallo, has made a statement saying that any radio, any television, any journalist that will make a statement, a comment that will threaten the peace of the country will be shut down. And from that statement, we have noticed that those days, internet is not working. And many radio stations have complained about the equipment being sabotaged. All the owners, union members of the media and the journalists, they made a statement to declare a blackout to start the boycott of any government activities until everything is back to normal.
Let me ask you, you mentioned that one radio station or a private radio station was attacked or sabotaged. Another had its transmitter dismantled by the authorities. First of all, what are the authorities saying in terms of who did this? Did they do it?
On that matter, I didn't hear any statement from the government recognizing that it is the action made by the security forces under the direction of any government members. But we can notice as, you know, individuals that many media are not functioning very well as they used to. And putting that in relation with the fact that even internet is not working in Guinea. What is the problem? The government is not saying anything about it, but it has been very, very difficult for people because living actually in a country without internet, without radio stations and televisions working properly, it is difficult, I would say unbelievable.
Do you think this press blackout of the authority, will it have any impact on the government or on the ordinary Guineans?
On both, I would say, because what the media do is very important, not only for the government, but also for the people. The only way people to be well informed is when we have a professional work of media. If media decide to do a blackout, it's going to affect not only the government, but the country as a whole.
The junta has been in power now for 2 years, I think so. Well, what is the root cause of this tension between the military junta and the journalists? Why is it happening now?
From ordinary people or people observing the situation like myself, we have noticed that in the last 2-3 weeks, many things went on. In the junta itself, we have noticed many changes. The chief of staff was removed and replaced by another person. And we have here a lot of rumors of people calling themselves as fortune tellers, predicting that the junta is going to be removed in favor of another person, meaning that there is another coup d'etat being prepared.
Faya Milimuno is the leader of the Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the Guinean capital, Conakry. A jury in Liberia last week acquitted four men, one Liberian and three foreigners, accused of shipping $100 million worth of illegal drugs to the country. The verdict has generated public outcry among Liberians at home and in the diaspora, especially at a time when there has been public uproar over the use of illicit substances by young people. Denise Nipson reports from Monrovia.
The Liberia Drug Enforcement Agency, LDEA, and the National Security Agency, NSA, was alerted to the shipment in October by the tip-off from the United States government. The agency seized a container owned by TRH Trading Corporation, which was loaded with a huge quantity of cocaine, hiding among a shipment of frozen chicken feet. The LDEA says that the consignment was in transit from Brazil to its destination, which was never disclosed before it was seized in Liberia. Liberian authorities accused four men, Malan Conte, Abdoulaye Dibri Diallo, Maki Ahmed Hassan, and Oliver Ezeze, and began legal proceedings, which concluded last Thursday evening against the accused. Of the four accused, one is Liberian and the rest are foreigners. But the grand jury of Monserrato County acquitted the men, accusing the prosecution of lacking conclusive evidence on charges that include money laundering, unlicensed possession of controlled drugs, unlicensed importation of controlled drugs, and criminal conspiracy. Some news outlets, like the Independent Probe, say the men have now gone into hiding. Liberians have been expressing their views about the verdict. This citizen believes that lots of questions remain unanswered.
Who brought the drugs? What happened with the drugs? So the drugs, it didn't just fly and just come to Liberia. No, we are not stupid. And then there was a delegate from the U.S. Embassy was sent to go and go investigate that drugs case. When it first landed in Liberia, it came as a frozen food. So then what happened now? Now they say, we are not guilty. So who brought the drugs? We want to know. This is our major concern, because our children, our brothers, our sisters, our uncles, they are dying on a daily basis. The government, everybody made a government, but they have to do something. They shouldn't just leave it just like this.
Another citizen, Michael Williams, says the outcome is scary and alleges that the system of justice has been compromised.
I'm afraid because, you know, now these drugs taking over the country, the communities, or you pass, even where I live now, you got a yaya that they call what, jungle yaya, where more guys, young boys go there to take drugs. So if you tell me that the people that were accused, not guilty, I'll let them know who will be responsible for the drugs that came in. And then to free the people, that's something that I can make anybody afraid, because none of these all the youth ain't getting.
Justice Minister Musa Dean described the verdict in a statement published Sunday in the Daily News magazine Front Page Africa. He said the verdict undermines the collective efforts of Liberia and its international partners to fight illegal drugs. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipson in Monrovia, Liberia.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 23rd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The United Nations Children's Fund recently said Sudan's war has displaced at least 450,000 children from their homes, with tens of thousands fleeing into neighboring countries. Aid groups say these refugee children are being deprived of education, without which they are at higher risk of exploitation, child marriage, and recruitment into armed groups. Henry Wilkins has more on the story from Borota, Chad, near the border with Sudan.
As tens of thousands of refugees arrive across the border from Sudan into Chad, much of the international assistance offered by the UN and aid groups has focused on water, food, and other basic services to refugees. But refugees like 18-year-old Abdel Nasser Mohammed says there is desperate need for education too. His hopes of going to university have been dashed by Sudan's civil war, which started on April 15th, triggering intercommunal violence in his hometown in West Darfur. He had to flee to Chad without his parents. He says his mum and dad had to go to Khartoum to get medical treatment. They are now stuck there because of the conflict and couldn't come with him to Chad. He arrived with only his siblings. Mohammed says he has not heard from his parents in weeks and does not know if they're alive or dead. He now lives in this tiny makeshift shelter with his brothers and sisters and says there is no way to take his Sudanese university entrance exams. Malek Mohammed, a teacher who has just fled to Chad from West Darfur, laments the squalid conditions that the children he used to teach are now forced to live in. He says all students, pupils and teachers are now living in the refugee camp. But this is not the right environment for education and it's hugely challenging, especially in the long term. If we're forced to stay here for a long period, he says, there'll be no learning, which causes problems in society later on. Mohammed says teachers are trying to work out a way for children to take Sudanese exams in Chad. The government in Khartoum has ceased to function since the civil war started, so coordination looks unlikely. Education Cannot Wait, ECW, is the United Nations Fund for Education in Times of Crisis. The organisation's director, Yasmin Sharif, made a visit to Chad in May, pledging $3 million to Chad for educational needs. She was asked why she thinks it's necessary to support education, even when the need for basics like food and water is so high.
Empower them to raise out of the ashes of that suffering. You don't empower them with water and food. These are necessities, but that alone is not going to empower them and prevent them from all the protection challenges, such as gender-based violence, sexual abuse, getting into armed groups, and certainly not giving them any hope for the future.
Sudan's war's impact on children is not confined to education. The UN announced on May 12th that a Sudanese factory producing 60% of specialised food used to treat child malnutrition in the country was destroyed in the fighting. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Barotta, Chad.
The Democratic Republic of Congo is preparing for presidential elections in December this year. However, the opposition took to the streets this past weekend to protest what they say are irregularities in the run-up to the vote, including the voter registration drive. They were met by tear gas by the police, who said they did not have permission to protest. Martin Fayulu is a member of the opposition who came second in the 2018 presidential election. He tells me that the voting process run by the Elections Commission, known as CENI, has not been transparent. He says the protest was also about violence throughout DRC and economic hardship in the country.
Yes, we had a demonstration, you know, a rally. But when we were going to the point of assembly, the police came and started to shoot the grenades, the tear gas, and even the real bullets, and they tried to send people away, but we resisted for 3 hours. And after 3 hours, we found that they damaged cars and they beat people, and we had a lot of injuries.
Did the police say that you were not supposed to march in some of the streets that you were marching on?
This is not true. The police doesn't have the authority to impose an itinerary. The thing is this, the law says that you sent a letter to the governor to inform him about the march. This is what you can do, just inform him. And then he has 3 days, 72 hours to answer, to say, yes, I've taken note, or I cannot take note because of this and that. Only the security situation will not allow him to take notes.
So you were protesting about some irregularities in the election process that's coming up in December. What sort of irregularities are you concerned about?
Not only irregularity, we have that non-transparency of the electoral process. This guy called Electoral Commission, they have been, first of all, put in place by violating the law. Secondly, everything they are doing there, they think are not transparent. They have launched the process of voter register. They are registering people, but with opacity, and nobody knows. That's why we said we are marching against the fraudulent and the chaotic process you have put in place. Secondly, we are marching to say that too many violences in the country, in the eastern part of the country, now in the western part, in the Bandundu, near Kinshasa, in everywhere, in Katanga, you have violences. And we don't want the Balkanization of Congo. We don't want Congo to be a member of Eastern African Community, and we want the peace. Thirdly, we are marching because of misery of people. People are starving, yet you see every day, you heard that the guy there, they have stolen $15 million. They have stolen $57 million. They have put in place a program of $130 million. The money have been out, but you cannot see the project. A lot of corruption, a lot of theft, but people are starving. Those are the three main reasons that we call that march.
Martin Fayulu is the member of the opposition in the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The Speaker of Uganda's Parliament, Anita Among, has called on the East African community to support an anti-LGBTQ bill passed by the Ugandan legislature. Supporters of the bill are waiting for it to be signed by President Yoweri Museveni. Moses Habyarimana reports from Arusha, Tanzania.
The Speaker of Uganda's Parliament, Anita Among, made her remarks during the 15th meeting of the speakers of legislatures of the seven countries of the East African Community. The meeting took place on Friday in Arusha, Tanzania. Among called on the support from other member states to fight for what she called immoral conduct in the community.
We recently passed a bill, the anti-homosexuality bill, which is due for an assent. We humbly request for your support as the East African legislator to identify with us in whatever we have done in order to protect the morals, the values, and the generations to come.
In March, the Ugandan parliament passed the bill that will see anyone who engages in same-sex relations charged with up to 20 years of imprisonment. The Speaker of the National Parliament of Tanzania, Tulia Ackson, expressed support for the call made by Among.
Uganda has just mentioned it's just one of those issues where we would really want our counterparts from other geopolitical groups of the IPU, but other people from the world, to understand us as Africans, but also to respect our views on certain things that we don't necessarily agree with them.
Many African countries do not recognize same-sex marriage. In Burundi's 2018 constitution, Article 29 specifically prohibits same-sex marriage and recognizes that such unions can only take place between men and women. The bill passed by the Ugandan parliament, if approved by President Museveni, proposes the death penalty for anyone engaging in homosexual acts. Fox Odoi is the only Ugandan member of the parliament who came out against the bill.
The anti-homosexuality bill passed by the Parliament of the Republic of Uganda is the most repressive and progressive penal legislation ever enacted by any parliament in modern times. It is anti-human rights, anti-humanity. No legislature or people living in modern times and living in a free and democratic society should ever emulate this piece of legislation.
LGBTQ people and their hetero allies disagree with the government force against them and accusations that same-sex behavior is imported from the West. According to the legislatures in Uganda, the bill proposes the life sentence for those found to engage in same-sex relations, whereas a less severe alternative to the act would promote a seven-year prison term. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Arusha, Tanzania.
And that's it for this Tuesday, May 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.